This is Aaron Palmer with 307 Net Radio, and I'm sitting down and talking with State Senator Dave Kinski. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you doing today?
Very good, thanks. It's been a busy week in Cheyenne. Crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, it's been extraordinarily busy. We have less than a week and a half to go in a 20-day session to wrap up a $10 billion budget, as well as consider a lot of important legislation. It's a breakneck pace.
Okay, let's get started. The first question I have is there's a major discrepancy, or a difference, I guess, between the Senate version and the House version of their budget bills, to the tune of almost $1 billion. So I guess, what are the next steps? What do we do from this point?
Well, what happens is the Senate reports back to the Senate Appropriations Committee. That was me and a couple of others reported back to the Senate floor on all the amendments that was made. At the same time, the House Appropriations Committee reported to the House floor all the Senate amendments. And then immediately what's called a Joint Conference Committee was appointed. So that's five people from the Senate, five people from the House, and their job is to try and reconcile the differences between the two versions of the budget and take back a compromise version to both the House and the Senate that presumably can obtain enough support to actually become a budget and go to the governor's desk. Now, if it doesn't happen that way, what could happen is a report can go back and one side or the other just shoots it down, in which case another committee is appointed, and you just keep trying until you run out of time. And if you look on the calendar, in theory, you run out of time this next Friday, the 8th, at 11:59 p.m. But actually, because we have 60 days by Constitution, we've not used them all. So we have three extra days. So in theory, we could stay Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday and continue to try and work out a deal. I don't know that that'll happen. Well, let's see what we do today. The House promised that they were going to deliver an offer to us in this Joint Conference Committee. We met on Wednesday. Staff walked us through all the differences, and then I said, well, let's go through and try to knock off a lot of easy things where there's not a whole lot of difference, just so that we can kind of start getting to used to agreeing on some things. And the House said, no, we're going to come back tomorrow and we're going to make a big offer. We're going to just start dealing with the big things. Okay, so we're going to go in today at noon and see what the House has to offer.
Okay. Well,
And again, like you said, Aaron, I hope that it's something that can help begin to bridge the gap. $1 billion difference in spending. You know, the House took the budget they got and added to it, and the Senate took the budget it got and subtracted from it.
The House has followed tradition and appointed members of the House Appropriations Committee as its representative to the Joint Conference Committee. However, Senate President Ogden Driscoll appointed you, Senator Salazar, who were members of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and then appointed Anthony Bouchard, Dan Larson, and Troy McCown. What will be the impact on the budget discussions with some of these more conservative members of the Senate on this committee?
Well, I think that they're more conservative. And they also don't have as much experience on appropriations, but I'll tell you what they've got. They've got the desire. They've got the desire to really do the job, do it right for the voters. They want to deliver a budget. They want to deliver a conservative budget. They're very serious. They've sat down and we've had hours and hours and hours of just doing homework, of going through various parts of the budget. They know they've got some catching up to do. And I'm proud of the team that I've got. And I think we're going to make the state of Wyoming proud when it's all done. I think we're going to be able to deliver a budget that's conservative. It won't have everything that we want. It won't have everything that the House people want. But I think these are fellows who are realistic and know that sometimes you got to compromise and try and get as much as you can. And that's the attitude we're going in with. It's a very positive attitude, good, strong work ethic. I think they're going to do fine.
So you're hopeful. Is that fair?
You know, Aaron, I was born an optimist.
Gotcha. Okay.
If you're not optimistic, it's just, you know, it's kind of hard to get out of bed every day, right? You've just got to have something to look forward to. And I'm always hopeful, you know, even when things run against you, I just always feel like there's a brighter day ahead and by golly, we're going to do all right.
Do you think services can be sufficiently funded by the Joint Conference Committee?
I think the budget that the base underlying budget, Aaron, takes care of everything that the people of Wyoming need to have in a budget. People kind of get focused on the whole and not the donut, but there's a lot of agreement in this budget. We fully funded the Department of Health. We fully funded things like fighting wildland and forest fires. We fully funded a cost of living increase for K-12 schools and for the child development centers. You know, there's a long list of things that have been taken care of. And, you know, the other differences are things like just how much capital construction do you need? How many more programs do you need? How many tens of millions of dollars do you need to put away for whatever cause? Are those really gotta haves or are those nice to haves? And the Senate felt they were nice to haves. And then one of the biggest differences is a couple of years ago, the legislature allocated over $300 million to the governor at his discretion to use on various kinds of energy projects. And at the time, it was felt like the feds are coming down on all these big things, hydrogen green. And if we want that, we've got to have, he's got to have $50 million in hand to match, you know, $1 billion from the Fed. And here a year went by and then another year went by and, you know, that sense of urgency is not there. Some of those projects went to North Dakota, New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, and there it sits at $300 million. And the Senate, and nothing against the governor, nothing against the governor. The Senate just felt like, you know, because these things are taking a lot longer than we thought originally, let's pull that money back into the savings account. And then as projects come up and are vetted, the governor submits them just like any other project. For instance, water projects all have to go through the legislature. Those have to be scrutinized. Wildlife projects go through the legislature. So, you know, it is a branch of government that's responsible for overseeing the purse strings. And that is about $300 million of the billion-dollar difference, is that the Senate said, let's pull that money back in. And since these projects are taking longer to roll out than had initially been thought, we're down here every 12 months. Go ahead and vet those projects, Governor, and put them in a bill, and we'll come down and consider them. That was the prevailing view on the Senate side. The House side was, no, let's leave that money there with discretion and no legislative oversight. That's a big difference. That's a big difference. And it's nothing against the governor. It's nothing against the process. It's nothing against the projects. It just says, you know, it's a co-equal branch of government. And we ought to see those things in a bill and give them some oversight before we spend $300 million.
Okay. And so there are some things in there that, as you said, that doesn't look like both chambers are too far apart. And a lot, and there's a lot of money involved. So even one or two changes can make a huge difference in the amount of money on these two budget bills.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. What current budget items, in your opinion, look likely to be cut?
You mean as between the House and the Senate?
Yes.
You know, we're so early on, Aaron. I can't say.
Okay.
We've just had two meetings, and ordinarily what you do is try and just take some of the easy stuff and knock it off while you continue discussions on the big stuff. And then the House said, no, we're going to come in tomorrow and lay an offer for all the big stuff. We'll see how We'll see how that goes.
You personally, Senator, what are some of the priorities that you would like to see or that you might kind of fight for in this process?
Well, number one, one of the big differences is in terms of construction of schools. I like to construct schools where the need is there. We have laws that say, as a consequence of these Supreme Court decisions, we have laws that say every school in the state gets assessed based on its condition and capacity. Are the students overflowing? Is the condition of the school bad? Every school. And then they get ranked. And then there's what's called a most cost-effective remedy study. So this is the state construction division says, well, do we need to tear this thing down? Or can we remodel it? Can we add on? What is the best way to do that? Well, that goes through a process, and at the end, there's politicians that say, we're just going to push this one in. The head of the line here, not a remodel on that one. Let's just build a new one here. And we're being sued for that very sort of thing. And so I'm okay with building new schools, remodeling schools, as long as it's done in a way consistent with what our statutes are and free of political influence. And the list that we've got there has been fiddled with a little bit, and that's a difference between the House and the Senate. I feel like you don't just decide you're going to rebuild a complete high school without having finished the studies. And those kinds of things are a difference there. That's a big sticking point.
Let's shift gears, Senator. Property tax relief. And yesterday we got a release from you that you were pretty tickled that there was a bill that wasn't yours, but it took a lot of your ideas and implemented into there. So you seem to be pretty pleased with that. So Senate File 54 is the bill that I'm talking about. So can you just kind of explain this? Which homeowners will get relief and who won't, and when will this all take effect? Can you just kind of give us an overview of the bill, please?
Sure. The base concept is this. There was a lot of discussion. Do you want to give somebody a percentage of their home's value as a credit against their tax, or do you want to give them a dollar value? So let's say you have a $400,000 house and you get a 25% credit. So 25% of $400,000 is $100,000. $400,000 minus $100,000. Now your house is assessed as a $300,000 house. On the other hand, if you have a dollar value, let's say $300,000, which is what I started with, $400,000 minus the $300,000, now your house is assessed as a $100,000 house. So what if you have a $5 million house, that 25% is worth a heck of a lot more to you than if you got a $400,000 house. So the idea is I wanted to stick to a dollar value because it ends up benefiting more people all across the state who really need the relief. The other virtue of it is because there's been such a huge run-up in property tax values, I wanted to not just cap it going forward, which is a good idea, but I wanted to give people a big break for the gouging they've already taken. But it was the percentage that was kind of in the ascendancy, and I finally managed, you know, and some others, you know, it's not a one-man show. There's a lot of people responsible to convince that the dollar value was the best. Now, because of the fiscal impact, I had to compromise and go to $200,000, which is still a heck of a credit. It makes 111,000 homes in the state virtually property tax free because they're worth $200,000 or less. So it is slated to go into effect this year, 2024. And to do that, again, we had some discussions. And by the way, Bo Biteman from Sheridan is just a rock star in this. He's chair of the Revenue Committee. And he really has carried a heavy load in terms of making sure that this happens. So hats off to Bo. To make it happen, the assessors said, if it's for the primary residence, people then have to just fill out an application. But because there's 148,000 homes or something, that's a lot of forms for the assessors to process, and they can't do that in time. So for the first year, we're saying every home gets it. That way we can implement it immediately. The second year, it will be primary residence only, and that gives the assessors time to have people, hey, come in, you need to fill out this form that says this is my primary residence, and we're going to key it in. So it's a big deal, and I'm just hoping it can get through the House, because what we did last year was a fig leaf of relief. We increased the credit, but you still had to file your income tax returns. You had to show your income was low enough and your assets were low enough that you could qualify, and still a lot of people qualified, but I feel like you shouldn't have to reveal your tax returns to get your property taxes reduced. And it should be for everybody, and this is. So I'm very optimistic, very hopeful. Now, the cost. The first year, the cost is about $250 million. Sounds like a lot of money, although I've seen Cheyenne spend that much in an afternoon. $250, what's happened since 2019, residential property taxes by the governments have gone up by 84%. Scheduled to hit $750 million. $750 million, $750 million in residential property taxes. If you give 250 of that back, the government still has $500 million. That 250 is to try and make up for the run-up in taxes that we had starting with the COVID and the interest rates at zero and people moving to Wyoming to get away from COVID and crazy progressive politics. So to me, it's taking a fiscal dividend and rebating it back to the taxpayer. In the subsequent years, when it's primary residence only, it's still $183 million a year. But to me, that's 25% of the run-up in property taxes we've had since 2019. So there's enough to operate the state, and there's still plenty to give people a little bit of relief, a lot of bit of relief from these property tax hikes.
Okay. I just so I understand this, I want to make sure the bill is set at $200,000. So there would be zero taxes for anyone who owns a home at $200,000 or less. So let me play devil's advocate for a minute, and let's say anyone who has a home that's $200,001 up to whatever. Is there a staggered percentage at that point up to a certain level that they're still getting some percentage of relief, or is there just nothing built in for people above that $200,000 threshold?
No, you get the $200,000 credit whether you've got a $200,000 house, a $500,000 house, or a $5 million house.
I got you. Okay, so that's where the quote-unquote percentage comes in. I got you. So you get...
No, the percentage is off the table. The dollar value struck the percentage, and now it's a dollar value. So if you have a $201,000 house, you take $201,000 minus $200,000, you would be assessed for a dollar.
Yes, everyone gets something, but it's based on the value of your home. I got it. Okay.
And you know, there's a lot of numbers floating around in there, Aaron, and now you know what, now you kind of get an idea of the difficulty of the debate on the floor, is trying to take all this stuff and get it so everybody understands it. I mean, you know, right. I generated spreadsheets and tables to try and it's, you know, none of this work is easy. I wish it were easy, but, I remember once my dad gave me a job, and I said, don't you have any easy jobs? And he said, what would I need you for then?
All right. One last question, because I know you got to get going and we need to wrap this up. But you said you were optimistic about getting something done this year, and that's great to hear. But what do you see as the difference this year over last year? Because about this time, in the legislature last year, there were quite a few bills for property tax relief that were still on the table. And then pretty much at the end of the session, most of them had just gone away. So you said that you feel optimistic this year that something will get done. What's the difference between this year and last year?
Well, the difference on the Senate side is that we've got a conservative majority that said we're going to get relief and we can't let it die because we have too many bills. So I'm the vice president. There's a fellow named Larry Hicks, who's the majority floor leader. And then there's Bo Bightman, who's the chair of revenue. And the determination was we are going to whittle down these bills to find one. And let's focus on that one, make it a good one, and get it over to the House. And what Bo Bightman said, and I thought it was a good suggestion, he said we've got a joint revenue committee bill. It's not the perfect bill, but let's make that the horse to ride and amend it in a way that, because then it doesn't have anybody's name on it. It's a product of the Joint Revenue Committee. And he said the House revenue and the Senate revenue have had differences. So symbolically, it's good to say, you know, this is a Joint Revenue Committee bill. And so that's the one we picked, Senate File 54, amended it. I think it's a darn good piece of legislation. It's gone over to the House, and hopefully it'll emerge from that in the same form that it went in. And we can get it to the governor's desk and start getting some relief to people, real relief, immediately.
Fair enough. Okay. That's State Senator Dave Kinski, who is in Cheyenne for this year's legislative budget session. Thanks, Dave, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me, Aaron. It's always a pleasure to visit with you. Take care. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, sir. You too.